Lick your lips, she said.
No, I said.
Oh, you are a stubborn one. Has Jean-Claude given you this courage?
What the hell are you talking about? Her eyes darkened, face clouding over.
Don't be coy, Anita. It does not become you.
Her voice was suddenly adult, hot enough to scald.
I know your little secret.
I don't know what you're talking about, I said, and I meant it. I didn't understand the anger.
If you like, we can play games for a little while longer.
She was suddenly standing beside Philip, and I hadn't seen her move.
Did that surprise you, Anita? I am still master of this city. I have powers that you and your master have never even dreamed of.
My master? What the hell was she talking about? I didn't have a master. She rubbed her hands along the side of his chest over his ribcage. Her hand wiped away the blood to show the skin smooth and untouched. She stood in front of him and didn't come to his collarbone. Philip had closed his eyes. Her head arched backwards, a glimpse of fangs, lips drawn back in a snarl. No. I stepped towards them. Winter's hands descended on my shoulders. He shook his head, slow and careful. I was not to interfere. She drove her fangs into his side. His whole body stiffened, neck arching, arms jerking at the chains. Leave him alone! I drove an elbow into Winter's stomach. He grunted, and his fingers dug into my shoulders until I wanted to scream. His arms enveloped me, tight to his chest, no movement allowed. She raised her face from Philip's skin. Blood trickled down her chin. She licked her lips with a tiny pink tongue.
Ironic, she said in a voice years older than the body would ever be. I sent Philip to seduce you. Instead, you seduced him.
We are not lovers. I felt ridiculous with Winter's arms crushing me to his chest.
Denial will not help either of you, she said.
What will help us? I asked. She motioned, and Winter released me. I stepped away from him, out of reach. It put me closer to Nikolaos, perhaps not an improvement.
Let us discuss your future, Anita.
She began to walk up the steps.
And your lover's future.
I assumed she meant Philip, and I didn't correct her. The nameless man motioned for me to follow her up the stairs. Aubrey was moving closer to Philip. They would be alone together. Unacceptable. Nikolaos, please. Maybe it was the please. She turned.
Yes,
she said. May I ask two things? She was smiling at me, amused with me. An adult's amusement with a child who had used a new word. I didn't care what she thought of me as long as she did what I wanted.
You may ask,
she said. That when we go, all the vampires leave this room. She was still staring at me, smiling, so far so good. And that I be allowed to speak with Philip privately. She laughed, high and wild, chimes in a storm wind.
You are bold, mortal. I give you that. I begin to see what Jean-Claude sees in you.
I let the comment go because I felt like I was missing part of the meaning. May I have what I ask, please?
Call me master, and you will have it.
I swallowed, and it was loud in the sudden stillness. Please, master? See, I didn't choke on the word after all.
Very good, animator, very good indeed.
Without her needing to say anything, Valentine and Aubrey went up the steps and out the door. They didn't even argue. That was frightening all on its own.
I will leave Burchard at the top of the steps. He has human hearing. If you whisper, he won't be able to hear you at all.
Burchard? I asked.
Yes, animator. Burchard, my human servant.
She stared at me as if that was significant. My expression didn't seem to please her. She frowned. Then she turned abruptly in a swing of white skirts. Winter followed her like an obedient puppy on steroids. Burchard, the once nameless man, took up a post in front of the closed door. He stared straight ahead, not at us. Privacy, or as close as we were getting to it. I went to Philip, and he still wouldn't look at me. His thick brown hair acted like a kind of curtain between us. Philip, What happened?
His voice was an abused whisper. Screaming will do that to you. I had to stand on tiptoe and nearly press my body against his to hear him.
Guilty pleasures. They took me from there.
Didn't Robert try to stop them? For some reason, that seemed important. I had only met Robert once, but part of me was angry that he had not protected Philip. He was in charge of things while Jean-Claude was away. Philip was one of those things.
Wasn't strong enough.
I lost my balance and was forced to catch myself, hands flat against his ruined chest. I jerked back, hands held out from me, bloody. Philip closed his eyes and leaned back into the wall. His throat worked hard at swallowing. There were two fresh bites on his neck. They were going to bleed him to death if someone didn't get carried away first. He lowered his head and tried to look at me, but his hair had spilled into both eyes. I wiped the blood on my jeans and went back to stand almost on tiptoe next to him. I brushed the hair back from his eyes, but it spilled forward again. It was beginning to bug me. I combed my fingers through his hair until it stayed out of his face. His hair was softer than it looked, thick and warm with the heat of his body. He almost smiled, his voice breaking as he whispered,
"Few months back, I'd have paid money for this."
I stared at him, then realized he was trying to make a joke.
God, my throat felt tight.
Burchard said, "It is time to go." I stared into Philip's eyes, perfect brown, torchlight dancing in them like black mirrors. "I won't leave you here, Philip." His eyes flickered to the man on the stairs and back to me. Fear turned his face young, helpless.
"See you later," he said.
I stepped back from him. "You can count on it." "It is not wise to keep her waiting," Burchard said. He was probably right. Philip and I stared at each other for a handful of moments. The pulse in his throat jumped under his skin like it was trying to escape. My throat ached. My chest was tight. The torchlight flickered in my vision for just a second. I turned away and walked to the steps. We tough-as-nails vampire slayers don't cry. At least, never in public. At least, never when we can help it. Burchard held the door open for me. I glanced back at Philip and waved like an idiot. He watches me go, his eyes too large for his face suddenly, like a child who watches its parent leave the room before all the monsters are gone. I had to leave him like that, alone, helpless. God help me.
Chapter 38.
Nicoleo sat in her carved wooden chair, tiny feet swinging off the ground. Charming. Aubrey leaned against the wall, tongue running over his lips, getting the last bit of blood off them. Valentine stood very still beside him, staring at me. Winter stood beside me, the prison guard. Burchard went to stand by Nicolaos, one hand on the back of her chair.
"What, animator? No jokes?"
Nicolaos asked. Her voice was still the grown-up version. It was like she had two voices and could change them with a push of a button. I shook my head. I didn't feel very funny.
"Have we broken your spirit? Taken the fight out of you?"
I stared at her. Anger flared through me like a wave of heat. "What do you want, Nicolaos?"
"Oh, that's much better."
Her voice rose and fell, a little girl giggle at the end of each word. I might never like children again.
"Jean-Claude should be growing weak inside his coffin, starving, but instead he is strong and well-fed. How can this be?"
I didn't have the faintest idea, so I kept quiet. Maybe it was rhetorical? It wasn't.
"Answer me. Anita?"
I don't know.
"Oh, but you do."
I didn't. But she wasn't going to believe me. "Why are you hurting Philip?"
"He needed to be taught a lesson after last night."
"Because he stood up to you?" I asked.
"Yes,"
she said.
"Because he stood up to me."
She scooted out of the chair and pattered towards me. She did a little turn so the white dress billowed around her. She freaking skipped over to me, smiling.
"And because I was angry with you. I torture your lover, and maybe I won't torture you. And perhaps this demonstration will give you fresh incentive to find the vampire murderer.
Her pretty little face was turned up to me, pale eyes gleaming with humor. She was good. I swallowed hard, and I asked the question I had to ask. Why were you angry with me? She cocked her head to one side. If she hadn't been blood-spattered, it would have been cute.
Could it be that you do not know?
She turned back to Burchard.
What think you, my friend? Is she ignorant?
He straightened his shoulders and said, I believe that it is possible.
Oh, Jean-Claude has been a very naughty boy, giving the second mark to an unsuspecting mortal.
I stood very still. I was remembering blue, fiery eyes on the stairs, and Jean-Claude's voice in my head. All right, I had suspected it, but I still didn't understand what it meant. What does the second mark mean? She licked her lips, soft like a kitten.
Shall we explain, Burchard? Shall we tell her what we know?
If she truly does not know, mistress, we must enlighten her, he said.
Yes,
she said, and glided back to the chair.
Burchard, tell her how old you are.
I am 603 years of age. I stared at his smooth face and shook my head. But you're a human, not a vampire. I've been given the fourth mark and will live as long as my mistress needs me. No, Jean-Claude wouldn't do that to me, I said. Nikolaos made a small shrugging motion with her hands.
I had pressed him very hard. I knew of the first mark, to heal you. I suppose he was desperate to save himself.
I remembered the echo of his voice in my head.
I'm sorry. I had no choice.
Damn him. There were always choices. He's been in my dreams every night. What does that mean?
He is communicating with you, Animator. With the third mark will come more direct mind contact.
I shook my head. No.
No what, Animator? No third mark? Or no, you don't believe us?
She asked. I don't want to be anyone's servant.
Have you been eating more than usual?
She asked. The question was so odd I just stared for a minute. Then I remembered. Yes. Is that important? Nikolaos frowned.
He is siphoning energy from you, Anita. He is feeding through your body. He should be growing weak by now, but you will keep him strong.
I didn't mean to.
I believe you,
she said.
Last night when I realized what he had done, I was beside myself with anger. So I took your lover.
Please believe me, he is not my lover.
Then why did he risk my anger to save you last night? Friendship? Decency? I think not.
All right, let her believe it. Just get us out alive, that was the goal. Nothing else mattered. What can Philip and I do to make amends?
Oh, so polite. I like that.
She put a hand on Burchard's waist, a casual gesture like petting a dog.
Shall we show her what she has to look forward to?
His whole body tensed as if an electric current had run through it. If my mistress wishes.
I do,
she said. Burchard knelt in front of her, face about chest level. Nikolaos looked over his head at me.
This,
she said,
is the fourth mark.
Her hands went to the small pearl buttons that decorated the front of the white dress. She spread the cloth wide, bearing small breasts. They were a child's breasts, small and half-formed. She drew a fingernail beside her left breast. The skin opened like earth behind a plow, spilling blood in a red line down her chest and stomach. I could not see Burchard's face as he leaned forward. His hands slid around her waist, his face buried between her breasts. She tensed, back arching. Soft sucking sounds filled the room's stillness. I looked away, staring at anything but them, as if I had found them having sex but couldn't leave. Valentine was staring at me. I stared back. He tipped an imaginary hat at me and flashed fangs. I ignored him. Burchard was sitting beside the chair, half leaning against it. His face was slack and flushed, his chest rising and falling in deep gasps. He wiped blood from his mouth with a shaking hand. Nikolaos sat very still, head back, eyes closed. Perhaps sex wasn't such a bad analogy after all. Nikolaos spoke with her eyes closed, head thrown back, voice thick.
Your friend Willie is back in a coffin. He felt sorry for Philip. We will have to cure him of such instincts.
She raised her head abruptly, eyes bright, almost glittering, as if they had a light all their own.
Can you see my scar today?
I shook my head. She was the beautiful child, complete and whole. No imperfections. You look perfect again. Why?
Because I am expending energy to make it so. I am having to work at it.
Her voice was low and warm, a building heat like thunderstorms in the distance. The hair at the back of my neck crawled. Something bad was about to happen.
Jean-Claude has his followers, Anita. If I kill him, they will make him a martyr. But if I prove him weak, powerless, they just fall away and follow me, or follow no one.
She stood, dress buttoned to her neck once more. Her cotton-white hair seemed to move as if a wind stirred it, but there was no wind.
I will destroy something Jean-Claude has given his protection to.
How fast could I get to the knife on my leg? And what good would it do me?
I will prove to all that Jean-Claude can protect nothing. I am master of all.
Egocentric bitch. Winter grabbed my arm before I could do anything. Too busy watching the vampires to notice the humans.
Go,
she said.
Kill him.
Aubrey and Valentine stood away from the wall and bowed. Then they were gone, as if they had vanished. I turned to Nikolaos. She smiled.
Yes, I clouded your mind and you did not see them go.
Where are they going? My stomach was tight. I think I already knew the answer.
Jean-Claude has given Philip his protection. Thus, he must die.
No. Nikolaos smiled.
Oh, but yes.
A scream ripped through the hallway. A man's scream. Philip's scream. No! I half fell to my knees. Only Winter's hand kept me from falling to the floor. I pretended to faint, sagging in his grip. He released me. I grabbed the knife from its ankle sheath. Winter and I were close to the hallway, far away from Nikolaos and her human. Maybe far enough. Winter was staring at her as if waiting for orders. I came up off the ground and drove the knife into his groin. The knife sank in and blood poured out as I drew the blade free and raced for the hallway. I was at the door when the first trickle of wind oozed down my back. I didn't look back. I opened the door. Philip sagged in the chains. Blood poured in a bright red flood down his chest. It splattered onto the floor like rain. Torchlight glittered on the wet bone of his spine. Someone had ripped his throat out. I staggered against the wall as if someone had hit me. I couldn't get enough air. Someone kept whispering, "Oh God, oh God," over and over, and it was me. I walked down the steps with my back pressed against the wall. I couldn't take my eyes from him, couldn't look away, couldn't breathe, couldn't cry. The torchlight reflected in his eyes, giving the illusion of movement. A scream built in my gut and spilled out my throat. Philip! Aubrey stepped between me and Philip. He was covered in blood.
I look forward to visiting your lovely friend, Catherine.
I wanted to run at him, screaming. Instead, I leaned against the wall, knife held down at my side, unnoticed. The goal was no longer to get out alive. The goal was to kill Aubrey. You son of a bitch. You fucking son of a bitch. My voice sounded utterly calm, no emotion whatsoever. I wasn't afraid. I didn't feel anything. Aubrey's face frowned at me through a mask of Philip's blood.
Do not say such things to me.
You ugly, stinking, motherfucking bastard. He glided to me, just like I wanted him to. He put a hand on my shoulder. I screamed in his face as loud as I could. He hesitated for just a heartbeat. I shoved the knife blade between his ribs. It was sharp and thin, and I shoved it hilt deep. His body stiffened, leaning into me, eyes wide and surprised. His mouth opened and closed, but no sound came out. He toppled to the floor, fingers grabbing at air. Valentine was instantly there, kneeling by the body.
What have you done?
He couldn't see the knife. It was shielded by Aubrey's body. I killed him, you son of a bitch. Just like I'm going to kill you. Valentine jerked to his feet, started to say something, and all hell broke loose. The cell door crashed inward and smashed to bits against the far wall. A tornado wind blasted into the room. Valentine dropped to his knees, head touching the floor. He was bowing. I flattened myself against the wall. The wind clawed at my face, tangling my hair in front of my eyes. The noise grew less, and I squinted up at the door. Nikolaos floated just above the top step. Her hair crackled around her head like spider silk. Her skin had shrunken against her bones until she was skeletal. Her eyes glowed, pale blue fire. She started floating down the steps, hands outstretched. I could see her veins like blue lights under her skin. I ran. Ran for the far wall and the tunnel the ratmen had used. The wind threw me against the wall, and I scrambled on hands and feet toward the tunnel. The hole was large and black. Cool air brushed my face, and something grabbed my ankle. I screamed. The thing that was Nikolaos dragged me back. It slammed me against the wall and pinned my wrists in one clawed hand. The body leaned into my legs, bone under cloth. The lips had receded, exposing the fangs and teeth. The skeletal head hissed.
You will learn obedience to me.
It screamed in my face, and I screamed back, wordlessly, an animal screaming in a trap. My heart was thudding in my throat. I couldn't breathe.
No!
The thing shrieked.
Look at me!
And I did. I fell into the blue fire that was her eyes. The fire burrowed into my brain. Pain. Her thoughts cut me up like knives, slicing away parts of me. Her rage scalded and burned until I thought the skin was peeling away from my face. Claws scrapped the inside of my skull, grinding bone into dust. When I could see again, I was huddled by the wall, and she was standing over me, not touching, not needing to. I was shaking, shaking so badly my teeth chattered. I was cold, so cold.
Eventually, Animator, you will call me Master, and you will mean it.
She was suddenly kneeling over me. She pressed her slender body over mine, hands pinning my shoulders to the floor. I couldn't move. The beautiful little girl leaned her face against my cheek and whispered,
I am going to sink fangs into your neck, and there is nothing you can do to stop me.
Her delicate shell of an ear was brushing my lips. I sank teeth into it until I tasted blood. She shrieked and jerked away, blood running down the side of her neck. Bright razor claws tore through my brain. Her pain, her rage, turning my brain into silly putty. I think I was screaming again, but I couldn't hear it. After a while, I couldn't hear anything. Darkness came. It swallowed up Nikolaos and left me alone, floating in the dark. Chapter 39. I woke up, which was a pleasant surprise all on its own. I was blinking up into an electric light set in a ceiling. I was alive, and I wasn't in the dungeon. Good things to know. Why should it surprise me that I was alive? My fingers caressed the rough, knobby fabric of the couch I was lying on. There was a picture hanging over the couch. A river scene with flatboats, mules, people. Someone came to stand over me. Long yellow hair, square-jawed, handsome face. Not as inhumanly beautiful as he had been to me before, but still handsome. I guess you had to be handsome to be a stripper. My voice came out in a harsh croak.
Robert.
He knelt beside me. I was afraid you wouldn't wake up before dawn. Are you hurt?
Where?
I cleared my throat and that helped a little.
Where am I?
Jean-Claude's office at Guilty Pleasures.
How did I get here?
Nikolaos brought you. She said, here's your master's whore. I watched his throat work as he swallowed. It reminded me of something, but I couldn't think what.
You know what Jean-Claude has done?
I asked. Robert nodded. My master has marked you twice. When I speak to you, I am speaking to him. Did he mean that figuratively or literally? I really didn't want to know. How do you feel? He asked. There was something in the way he asked it that meant I shouldn't feel all right. My throat hurt. I raised a hand and touched it. Dried blood. On my neck. I closed my eyes, but that didn't help. A small sound escaped my throat, very like a whimper. Philip's image was burned on my mind. The blood pouring from his throat, torn pink meat. I shook my head and tried to breathe deep and slow. It was no good. Bathroom, I said. Robert showed me where it was. I went inside, knelt on the cool floor and threw up in the toilet until I was empty and nothing but bile came up. Then I walked to the sink and splashed cold water in my mouth and on my face. I stared at myself in the mirror above the sink. My eyes looked black, not brown, my skin sickly. I looked like shit and felt worse. And there on the right side of my neck was the real thing. Not Philip's healing bite marks, but fang marks. Tiny, diminutive fang marks. Nikolaos had contaminated me. To prove she could harm Jean-Claude's human servant. She had proved how tough she was. Oh, yeah. Real tough. Philip was dead. Dead. Try the word over in your mind, but could I say it out loud? I decided to try. Philip is dead, I told my reflection. I crumbled the brown paper towel and stuffed it in the metal trash can. It wasn't enough. I screamed. Ah! I kicked the trash can over and over until it toppled to the floor, spilling its contents. Robert came through the door. Are you all right? Does it look like I'm all right? I yelled. He hesitated in the doorway. Is there anything I can do to help? You couldn't even keep them from taking Philip. He winced as if I had hit him. I did my best. Well, it wasn't good enough, was it? I was still screaming like a mad person. I sank to my knees and all that rage choked up my throat and spilled out my eyes. Get out! He hesitated. Are you sure? Get out of here! He closed the door behind him. And I sat on the floor and rocked and cried and screamed. When my heart felt as empty as my stomach, I felt leaden, used up. Nikolaos had killed Philip and bitten me to prove how powerful she was. I bet she thought I'd be scared absolutely shitless of her. She was right on that. But I spend most of my waking hours confronting and destroying things that I fear. A 1,000-year-old master vampire was a tall order, but a girl's gotta have a goal. Chapter 40. The club was quiet and dark. There was no one there but me. It must have been after dawn. The club was hushed and full of that waiting silence that all buildings get after the people go home. As if once we leave, the building has a life of its own, if only we would leave it in peace. I shook my head and tried to concentrate, to feel something. All I wanted was to go home and try to sleep, and pray I didn't dream. There was a yellow post-it note on the door. It read, "Your weapons are behind the bar. The master brought those, too. Robert." I put both guns in place and the knives. The one I had used on Winter and Aubrey was missing. Was Winter dead? Maybe. Was Aubrey dead? Hopefully. Usually it took a master vampire to survive a blow to the heart, but I'd never tried it on a 500-year-old walking corpse. If they took the knife out, he might be tough enough to survive it. I had to call Catherine. And tell her what? Get out of town, a vampire is after you? Didn't sound like something she'd buy. Shit. I walked out into the soft white light of dawn. The street was empty, and awash in that gentle morning air. The heat hadn't had time to creep in. It was almost cool. Where was my car? I heard footsteps a second before the voice said, "Don't move. I have a gun pointed at your back." I clasped my hands atop my head without being asked. "Good morning, Edward," I said. "Good morning, Anita," he said. "Stand very still, please." He stood just behind me, gun pressing against my spine. He frisked me completely, top to bottom. Nothing haphazard about Edward. That's one of the reasons he's still alive. He stepped back from me and said, "You may turn around now." He had my Firestar tucked into his belt, the Browning loose in his left hand. I don't know what he did with the knives. He smiled, boyish and charming, gun very steadily pointed at my chest. "No more hiding. Where is this Nikolaos?" he asked. I took a deep breath and let it out. I thought about accusing him of being the vampire murderer, but now didn't seem to be a good time. Maybe later, when he wasn't pointing a gun at me. "May I lower my arms?" I asked. He gave a slight nod. I lowered my arms slowly. "I want one thing clear between us, Edward. I'll give you the information, but not because I'm afraid of you. I want her dead. And I want a piece of it." His smile widened, eyes glittering with pleasure. "What happened last night?" I glanced down at the sidewalk, then up. I stared into his blue eyes and said, "She had Philip killed." He was watching my face very closely. "Go on." "She bit me. I think she plans on making me a personal servant." He put his gun back in his shoulder holster and came to stand next to me. He turned my head to one side to see the bite mark better. "You need to clean this bite. It's gonna hurt like hell." "I know. Will you help me?"
"Sure."
His smile softened. "Here I was gonna cause you pain to get information. Now you ask me to help you pour acid on a wound."
"Holy water," I said.
"It's gonna feel the same," he said.
Unfortunately, he was right.
Chapter 41. I sat with my back pressed against the cool porcelain of the bathtub. The front and side of my shirt was clinging to me, water-soaked. Edward knelt beside me, a half-empty bottle of holy water in one hand. We were on the third bottle. I had only thrown up once. Bully for me. We had started with me sitting on the edge of the sink. I had not stayed there long. I had jumped, yelled, and whimpered. I had also called Edward a son of a bitch. He didn't hold it against me.
"How do you feel?" he asked.
His face was utterly blank. I couldn't tell if he was enjoying himself or hating it. I glared up at him, like someone's been shoving a red-hot knife against my throat.
"I mean, do you want to stop and rest a while?"
I took a deep breath. "No. I want it clean, Edward. All the way." He shook his head, almost smiled.
"It is customary to do this over a matter of days, you know."
"Yes," I said.
"But you want it all in one marathon session?"
His gaze was very steady, as if the question were more important than it seemed. I looked away from the intensity of his eyes. I didn't want to be stared at right now. "I don't have a few days. I need this wound clean before nightfall."
"Because Nikolaos will come visit you again," he said.
"Yes," I said.
"And unless this first wound is purified, she'll have a hold on you."
I took a deep breath and it trembled.
"Yes." "Even if we clean the bite, she may still be able to call you, if she's as powerful as you say she is."
"She's that powerful and more." I rubbed my hands along my jeans. "You think Nikolaos can turn me against you, even if we clean the bite?" I looked up at him then, hoping to be able to read his face. He stared down at me.
"We vampire slayers take our chances."
"That wasn't a no," I said. He gave a flash of smile.
"It wasn't a yes either."
"Oh, goody. Edward didn't know either. Pour some more on before I lose my nerve." He did smile then, eyes gleaming.
"You will never lose your nerve. Your life, probably, but never your nerve."
It was a compliment, and meant as one.
"Thank you."
He put a hand on my shoulder and I turned my face away. My heart was thudding in my throat until all I could hear was my blood pulsing inside my head. I wanted to run, to lash out, to scream, but I had to sit there and let him hurt me. I hate that. It had always taken at least two people to give me injections when I was a child. One person to man the needle, and one to hold me down. Now I held myself down. If Nikolaos bit me twice, I would probably do anything she wanted me to, even kill. I had seen it happen before, and that vampire had been child's play compared to the master. The water trickled down my skin and hit the bite mark like molten gold, scalding through my body.
It was eating through my skin and bone, destroying me, killing me. I shrieked. I couldn't hold it. Too much pain. Couldn't run away. Had to scream. I was lying on the floor, my cheek pressed against the coolness of it, breathing in short, hungry gasps.
Slow your breathing, Anita. You're hyperventilating. Breathe slow and easy or you're gonna pass out.
I opened my mouth and took in a deep breath. It wheezed and screamed down my throat. I was choking on air. I coughed and fought to breathe. I was lightheaded and a little sick by the time I could take a deep breath, but I hadn't passed out. A zillion brownie points for me. Edward almost had to lie on the floor to put his face near mine.
Can you hear me?
I managed.
Yes.
Good. I want to try to put the cross against the bite. Do you agree or do you think it's too soon? If we hadn't cleansed the wound with enough holy water, the cross would burn me and I'd have a fresh scar. I had been brave above and beyond the call of duty. I didn't want to play anymore. I opened my mouth to say no, but it wasn't what came out.
Do it, I said.
Shit. I was going to be brave. He brushed my hair away from my neck. I lay on the floor and pressed my hands into fists, trying to prepare myself. There is no real way to prepare yourself for somebody shoving a branding iron into your neck. The chain rustled and slithered through Edward's hands.
Are you ready?
No.
Just do it, damn it.
He did. The cross pressed against my skin, cool metal. No burning, no smoke, no seared flesh, no pain. I was pure, or as pure as I started out. He dangled the crucifix in front of my face. I grabbed it with one hand and squeezed until my hand shook. It didn't take long. Tears seeped from the corners of my eyes. I wasn't crying, not really. I was exhausted.
Can you sit up?
He asked. I nodded and forced myself to sit, leaning against the bathtub.
Can you stand up?
He asked. I thought about it and decided no, I didn't think I could. My whole body was weak, shaky, nauseous.
Not without help.
Edward knelt beside me, put an arm behind my shoulders and one under my knees, and lifted me in his arms. He stood in one smooth motion, no strain.
Put me down, I said.
He looked at me.
What?
I'm not a child. I don't want to be carried. He drew a loud breath, then said,
All right.
He lowered me to my feet and let go. I staggered against the wall and slid to the floor. The tears were back.
Damn it.
I sat on the floor, crying, too weak to walk from my bathroom to my bed.
God.
Edward just stood there, looking down at me, face neutral and unreadable as a cat. My voice came out almost normal, no hint of crying.
I hate being helpless. I hate it.
You are one of the least helpless people I know, Edward said. He knelt beside me again, draped my right arm over his shoulders, grabbed my right wrist with his hand. His other arm encircled my waist. The height difference made it a little awkward, but he managed to give me the illusion that I walked to the bed. The stuffed penguins sat against the wall. Edward hadn't said anything about them. If he wouldn't mention it, I wouldn't. Who knows? Maybe Death slept with a teddy bear?
Nah.
The heavy drapes were still closed, leaving the room in permanent twilight.
Rest. I'll stand guard and see that none of the bogeys sneak up on you.
I believed him. Edward brought the white chair from the living room and sat it against the bedroom wall near the door. He slipped his shoulder holster back on, gun ready at hand. He had brought a gym bag up from the car with us. He unzipped it and drew out what looked like a miniature machine gun. I didn't know much about machine guns, and all I could think of was an Uzi.
What kind of gun is that?
I asked.
A mini Uzi?
What do you know? I had been right. He popped the clip and showed me how to load it, where the safety was, all the finer points like it was a new car. He sat down in the chair with the machine gun on his knees. My eyes kept fluttering shut, but I said,
Don't shoot any of my neighbors, okay?
I think he smiled. I'll try not to. I nodded.
Are you the vampire murderer?
He smiled then, bright, charming.
Go to sleep, Anita.
I was on the edge of sleep when his voice called me back, soft and far away. Where is Nikolaos's daytime retreat?
I opened my eyes and tried to focus on him. He was still sitting in the chair, motionless.
I'm tired, Edward. Not stupid.
His laughter bubbled up around me as I fell asleep. Chapter 42. Jean-Claude sat in the carved throne. He smiled at me and extended one long-fingered hand. Come, he said. I was wearing a long white dress that had lace of its own. I had never dreamed of myself in anything like it. I glanced up at Jean-Claude. It was his choice, not mine. Fear tightened my throat. It's my dream, I said. He held out both hands and said, Come. And I went to him. The dress whispered and scraped on the stones, a continuous rustling noise. It grated on my nerves. I was suddenly standing in front of him. I raised my hands toward his slowly. I shouldn't do it. Bad idea. But I couldn't seem to stop myself. His hands wrapped around mine and I knelt before him. He drew my hands to the lace that spilled down the front of his shirt, forced my fingers to take two handfuls of it. He cupped his hands over mine, holding them tight. Then he ripped his shirt open using my hands. His chest was smooth and pale, with black hair curling in a line down the middle. The hair thickened over the flatness of his stomach, incredibly black against the white of his belly. The burn scar was firm and shiny and out of place against the perfection of his body. He gripped my chin in one hand, raising my face towards him. His other hand touched his chest, just below his right nipple. He drew blood on his pale skin. It trickled down his chest in a bright crimson line. I tried to pull away, but his fingers dug into my jaw like a vise. I shouted, No! I hit at him with my left hand. He caught my wrist and held it. I used my right hand to grip the floor and shoved with my knees. He held me at jaw and wrist like a butterfly on a pin. You can move, but you can't get away. I dropped to a sitting position, forcing him to strangle me or lower me to the ground. He lowered me. I kicked out with everything I had. Both feet connected with his knee. Vampires can feel pain. He dropped my jaw so suddenly I fell backwards. He grabbed both my wrists and jerked me to my knees, body pinned on either side by his legs. He sat in the chair, knees controlling my lower body, hands like chains on my wrists. A high, tinkling laughter filled the room. Nikolaos stood to one side watching us. Her laughter echoed through the room, growing louder and louder like music gone mad. Jean-Claude transferred both my wrists to one hand, and I could not stop him. His free hand stroked my cheek, smoothing down the line of my neck. His fingers tightened at the base of my skull and began to push. Jean-Claude, please don't do this. He pressed my face closer and closer to the wound on his chest. I struggled, but his fingers were welded to my skull, a part of me. No! Nikolaos' laughter changed to words.
Scratch the surface and we are all much alike, animator.
I screamed. Jean-Claude! His voice came like velvet, warm and dark, sliding through my mind.
Blood of my blood, flesh of my flesh, two minds with but one body, two souls wedded as one.
For one bright, shining moment, I saw it, felt it, eternity with Jean-Claude. His touch, forever. His lips, his blood. I blinked and found my lips almost touching the wound in his chest. I could have reached out and licked it.
Jean-Claude, no! Jean-Claude!
I screamed it.
God, help me!
I screamed that, too. Darkness, and someone gripping my shoulder. I didn't even think about it. Instinct took over. The gun from the headboard was in my hand and turning to point. A hand trapped my arm under the pillow, pointing the gun at the wall, a body pressing against mine. Anita, Anita, it's Edward, look at me! I blinked up at Edward, who was pinning my arms. His breathing was coming a little fast. I stared at the gun in my hand and back at Edward. He was still holding my arms. I guess I didn't blame him. Are you all right? He asked. I nodded. Say something, Anita.
I had a nightmare, I said.
He shook his head. No shit. He released me slowly. I slid the gun back in its holster. Who's Jean-Claude? he asked.
Why? You were calling his name.
I brushed a hand over my forehead, and it came away slick with sweat. The clothes I'd slept in and the sheet were drenched with it. These nightmares were beginning to get on my nerves. What time is it? The room looked too dark, as if the sun had gone down. My stomach tightened. If it was near dark, Catherine wouldn't have a chance. Don't panic, it's just clouds. You've got about 4 hours until dusk. I took a deep breath and staggered into the bathroom. I splashed cold water on my face and neck. I looked ghost pale in the mirror. Had the dream been Jean-Claude's doing or Nikolaos's? If it had been Nikolaos, did she already control me? No answers. No answers to anything. Edward was sitting in the white chair when I came back out. He watched me like I was an interesting species of insect that he had never seen before. I ignored him and called Catherine's office. Hi, Betty, this is Anita Blake. Is Catherine in?
Hello, Miss Blake. I thought you knew that Miss Mazin is going to be out of town from the 13th until the 20th on a deposition.
Catherine had told me, but I forgot. I finally lucked out. It was about time. I forgot, Betty. Thanks a lot. Thanks more than you'll ever know.
Glad to be of help. Miss Mazin has scheduled the first fitting for the bridesmaid dresses on the 23rd.
She said it like it should make me feel better. It didn't. I won't forget. Bye.
Have a nice day.
I hung up and phoned Irving Griswold. He was a reporter for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He was also a werewolf. Irving the werewolf. It didn't quite work, but then what did? Charles the werewolf? Nah. Justin? Oliver? Wilbur? Brent? Nope. Irving answered on the third ring. It's Anita Blake. Well, hi, what's up? He sounded suspicious, as if I never called him unless I wanted something. Do you know any were-rats? He was quiet for almost too long, then, why do you want to know? I can't tell you. You mean you want my help, but I don't get a story out of it. I sighed. That's about it.
Then why should I help you?
Don't give me a hard time, Irving. I've given you plenty of exclusives. My information is what got you your first front-page byline, so don't give me grief.
A little grouchy today, aren't you?
Do you know a were-rat or don't you?
I do.
I need to get a message to the Rat King. He gave a low whistle that was piercing over the phone.
You don't ask for much, do you? I might be able to get you a meeting with the were-rat I know, but not their king.
Give the Rat King this message. Got a pencil?
Always, he said.
The vampires didn't get me, and I didn't do what they wanted. Irving read it back to me. When I confirmed it, he said,
You're involved with vampires and were-rats, and I don't get an exclusive.
No one's going to get this one, Irving. It's going to be too messy for that. He was silent for a moment.
Okay, I'll try to set up a meeting. I should know sometime tonight.
Thanks, Irving.
You be careful, Blake. I'd hate to lose my best source of front-page bylines.
Me too, I said. I had no sooner hung up the phone when it rang again. I picked it up without thinking. A phone rings, you pick it up. Years of training. I haven't had my answering machine long enough to shake it completely. Anita? This is Bert. Hi, Bert. I sighed quietly. I know you're working on the vampire case, but I have something you might be interested in. Bert, I am way over my head already. Anything else, and I may never see daylight. You'd think Bert would ask if I was all right. How was I doing? But no, not my boss. Thomas Jensen called today. My spine straightened.
Jensen called?
That's right.
He's going to let us do it?
Not us. You. He specifically asked for you. I tried to get him to take someone else, but he wouldn't do it. And it has to be tonight. He's afraid he'll chicken out.
Damn,
I said softly. Do I call him back and cancel, or can you give me a time to have him meet you?
Why did everything have to come at once?
One of life's rhetorical questions. Have him meet me at full dark tonight. That's my girl. I knew you wouldn't let me down. I'm not your girl, Bert. How much is he paying you? $30,000. The $5,000 down payment has already arrived by special messenger. You are an evil man, Bert.
Yes, he said,
and it pays very well, thank you. He hung up without saying goodbye. Mr. Charm. Edward was staring at me. Did you just take a job raising the dead for tonight?
Laying the dead to rest, actually, but yes.
Does raising the dead take it out of you?
It? I asked. He shrugged. Energy, stamina, strength. Sometimes. How about this job? Is it an energy drain? I smiled. Yes. He shook his head.
You can't afford to be used up, Anita.
I won't be used up, I said. I took a deep breath and tried to think how to explain things to Edward. Thomas Jensen lost his daughter 20 years ago. 7 years ago, he had her raised as a zombie.
So?
She committed suicide. No one knew why at the time. It was later learned that Mr. Jensen had sexually abused his daughter, and that was why she had killed herself.
And he raised her from the dead. Edward grimaced. You don't mean...
I waved my hands as if I could erase the sudden, vivid image. No, no, not that. He felt remorseful and raised her to say he was sorry.
And?
She wouldn't forgive him. He shook his head.
I don't understand.
He raised her to make amends, but she had died hating him, fearing him. The zombie wouldn't forgive him, so he wouldn't put her back. As her mind deteriorated, and her body, too, he kept her with him as a sort of punishment.
Jesus.
Yeah, I said. I walked to the closet and got out my gym bag. Edward carried guns in his. I carried my animator paraphernalia in it. Sometimes, I carried my vampire slaying kit in it. The matchbook Zachary gave me was in the bottom of the bag. I stuffed it in my pants pocket. I don't think Edward saw me. He does catch on if a clue sits up and barks. Jensen finally agreed to put her in the ground if I'll do it. I can't say no. He's sort of a legend among animators, the closest we come to a ghost story.
Why tonight? If it's waited 7 years, why not a few more nights?
I kept putting things in the gym bag. He insisted. He's afraid he'll lose his nerve if he has to wait. Besides, I may not be alive a few nights from now. He might not let anybody else do it.
That is not your problem. You didn't raise his zombie.
No, but I am an animator first. Vampire slaying is a sideline. I am an animator. It isn't just a job. He was still staring at me.
I don't understand why, but I understand you have to do it.
Thanks. He smiled.
Your show. Mind if I come along to make sure no one offs you while you're gone?
I glanced at him.
Ever see a zombie raising?
No.
You're not squeamish, are you?
I smiled when I said it. He stared at me, blue eyes gone suddenly cold. His whole face became different. There was nothing there, no expression, except that awful coldness. Emptiness. I'd had a leopard look at me like that once, through the cage bars. No emotion I understood. Thoughts so alien it might as well have inhabited a different planet. Something that could kill me, skillfully, efficiently, because that was what it was meant to do, if it was hungry, or if I annoyed it. I didn't faint from fear or run screaming from the room, but it was something of an effort. You've proved your point, Edward. Can the perfect killer routine and let's go. His eyes didn't revert to normal instantly, but had to warm up, like dawn easing through the sky. I hoped Edward never turned that look on me for real. If he did, one of us would die. Odds are, it would be me. Chapter 43. The night was almost perfectly black. Thick clouds hid the sky. A wind rushed along the ground and smelled of rain. Iris Jensen's grave marker was smooth white marble. It was a nearly life-sized angel, wings outspread, arms open, welcoming. You could still read the lettering by flashlight. Beloved daughter, sadly missed. The same man who had had the angel carved, who sadly missed her, had been molesting her. She had killed herself to escape him, and he had brought her back. That was why I was out here in the dark, waiting for the Jensens, not him, but her. Even though I knew her mind was gone by now, I wanted Iris Jensen in the ground and at peace. I couldn't explain that to Edward, so I hadn't tried. A huge oak stood sentinel over the empty grave. The wind rushed through the leaves and sent them skittering and whispering overhead. It sounded too dry, like autumn leaves instead of summer. The air felt cool and damp, rain almost upon us. It wasn't unbearably hot for once.
I had picked up a pair of chickens. They clucked softly from inside their crate where they sat near the grave. Edward leaned against my car, ankles crossed, arms loose at his sides. The gym bag was open by me on the ground. The machete I used gleamed from inside. "Where is he?" Edward asked. I shook my head. "I don't know." It had been almost an hour since full dark. The cemetery grounds were mostly bare. Only a few trees dotted the soft roll of hills. We should have been seeing car lights on the gravel road. Where was Jensen? Had he chickened out? Edward stepped away from the car and walked to stand beside me. "I don't like it, Anita." I wasn't too thrilled either, but we'll give it another 15 minutes. If he's not here by then, we'll leave. Edward glanced around the open ground. "Not much cover around here. I don't think we have to worry about snipers." "You said someone shot at you, right?" I nodded. He had a point. Goosebumps marched up my arms. The wind blew a hole in the clouds and moonlight streamed down. Off in the distance, a small building gleamed silver-gray in the light. "What's that?" Edward asked. "The maintenance shed," I said. "You think the grass cuts itself?" "Never thought about it," he said. The clouds rolled in again and plunged the cemetery into blackness. Everything became soft shapes. The white marble seemed to glow with its own light. There was the sound of scrabbling claws on metal. I whirled. A ghoul sat on top of my car. It was naked and looked as if a human being had been stripped and dipped into silver-gray paint, almost metallic. But the teeth and claws on its hands and feet were long and black, curved talons. The eyes glowed crimson. Edward moved up beside me, gun in his hand. I had my gun out, too. "Practice, practice, and you don't have to think about it." "What's it doing up there?" he asked. "Don't know." I waved my free hand at it and said, "Scat!" It crouched, staring at me. Ghouls are cowards. They don't attack healthy human beings. I took 2 steps, waving my gun at it. "Go away! Shoo!" Any show of force sends them scuttling away. This one just sat there. I backed away. "Edward?" I said softly.
"Yes?"
"I didn't sense any ghouls in this cemetery."
"So? You missed one."
"There's no such thing as just one ghoul. They travel in packs, and you don't miss them. They leave a sort of psychic stench behind. Evil."
"Anita?"
His voice was soft, normal, but not normal. I glanced where he was looking and saw 2 more ghouls creeping up behind us. We stood almost back to back, guns pointing out. "I saw a ghoul attack earlier this week. Healthy man killed. A cemetery where there were no ghouls."
"Sounds familiar," he said.
"Yeah. Bullets won't kill them."
"I know."
"What are they waiting for?" he asked.
"Courage, I think."
"They're waiting for me," a voice said. Zachary stepped around the trunk of the tree. He was smiling.
I think my mouth dropped to the ground. Maybe that was what he was smiling at. I knew then. He wasn't killing human beings to feed his gree-gree. He was killing vampires. Teresa had tormented him, so she had been the next victim. There were still some questions, though. Big ones. Edward glanced at me, then back at Zachary. "Who is this?" he asked. "The vampire murderer, I presume," I said. Zachary gave a little bow. A ghoul leaned against his leg, and he stroked its nearly bald head.
"When did you guess?"
"Just now. I'm a little slow this year." He frowned then. "I thought you'd figure it out eventually. That's why you destroyed the zombie witness's mind, to save yourself."
"It was fortunate that Nicolaos left me in charge of questioning the man."
He smiled when he said it. "I'll bet," I said. "How did you get the 2-biter to shoot me at the church?"
"That was easy. I told him the orders came from Nicolaos."
"Of course." "How are you getting the ghouls out of their cemetery? How come they obey your orders?"
"You know the theory that if you bury an animator in a cemetery, you get ghouls?"
"Yeah."
"When I came out of the grave, they came with me, and they were mine. Mine."
I glanced at the creatures and found that there were more of them. At least 20. A big pack. "So you're saying that's where ghouls come from?" I shook my head. "There aren't enough animators in the world to account for all the ghouls."
"I've been thinking about that," he said.
I think that the more zombies you raise in a cemetery, the greater your chances for ghouls.
You mean like a cumulative effect?
Exactly. I've been wanting to talk this over with another animator, but you see the problem.
Yes, I said. I do. Can't talk shop without admitting what you are and what you've done.
Edward fired without warning. The bullet took Zachary in the chest and twisted him around. He lay face down, the ghouls frozen. Then, Zachary raised himself up on his elbows. He stood with a little help from an anxious ghoul.
Sticks and stones may break my bones, but bullets will never hurt me.
Great, a comedian, I said.
Edward fired again, but Zachary darted behind the tree trunk. He called, hidden from sight.
Now, now, no hitting the head. I'm not sure what would happen if you put a bullet in my brain.
Let's find out, Edward said.
Goodbye, Anita. I won't stay around to watch.
He walked away with a troop of ghouls surrounding him. He was crouched in the middle of them, hiding, I supposed, from a bullet in the brain, but for a minute I couldn't pick him out. Two more ghouls appeared around the car, crouched low on the gravel drive. One was female with the tatters of a dress still clinging to her.
Let's give them something to be afraid of, Edward said.
I felt him move, and his gun fired twice. A high-pitched squealing filled the night. The ghoul on my car leaped to the ground and hid. But there were more of them moving in from all sides. At least 15 of them had been left behind for us to play with. I fired and hit one of them. It fell to its side and rolled in the gravel, making that same high-pitched noise like a wounded rabbit. Piteous and animal.
Is there any place we can run to? Edward asked.
The maintenance shed, I said.
Is it wood?
Yes.
It won't stop them.
No, I said, but it will get us out of the open.
Okay. Any advice before we start to move?
Don't run until we are very close to the shed. If you run, they'll chase you. They'll think you're scared.
Anything else? He asked.
You don't smoke, do you?
No. Why?
They're afraid of fire.
Great. We're going to be eaten alive because neither one of us smokes.
I almost laughed. He sounded so thoroughly disgusted, but a ghoul was crouching to leap at me, and I had to shoot it between the eyes. No time for laughter.
Let's go. Slow and easy, I said.
I wish the machine gun wasn't in the car.
Me too.
Edward fired three shots, and the night filled with squeals and animal screams. We started walking towards the distant shed. I'd say maybe a quarter of a mile away. It was going to be a long walk. A ghoul charged us. I dropped it, and it spilled to the grass, but it was like shooting targets. No blood, just empty holes. It hurt, but not enough. Not nearly enough. I was walking nearly backwards, one hand back, feeling Edward's forward movement. There were too many of them. We were not going to make it to the shed, no way. One of the chickens made a soft, questioning cluck. I had an idea. I shot one of the chickens. It flopped, and the other bird panicked, beating its wings against the wooden crate. The ghouls froze, then one put its face into the air and sniffed. Fresh blood, boys, come and get it. Fresh meat. Two ghouls were suddenly racing for the chickens. The rest followed, scrambling over each other to crack the wood and get to the juicy morsels inside. Keep walking, Edward. Don't run, but walk a little faster. The chickens won't hold them long. We walked a little faster. The sounds of scrambling claws, cracking bone, the splatter of blood, the squabbling howls of the ghouls. It was an unwelcome preview. Halfway to the shed, a howl went up through the night, long and hostile. No dog ever sounded like that. I glanced back, and the ghouls were rushing over the ground on all fours.
Run,
I said. We ran. We crashed against the shed door and found the damn thing padlocked. Edward shot the lock off, no time to pick it. The ghouls were close, howling as they came. We scrambled inside, closing the door for what good it would do us. There was one small window high up near the ceiling. Moonlight suddenly spilled through it. There was a herd of lawnmowers against one wall, some of them hanging from hooks. Gardening shears, hedge trimmers, trowels, a curl of garden hose. The whole shed smelled of gasoline and oily rags. Edward said,
"There's nothing to put against the door, Anita."
He was right. We'd blown the lock off. Where was a heavy object when you needed it? Roll a lawnmower against it. That won't hold them long. It's better than nothing.
I said. He didn't move, so I rolled a lawnmower against the door. I won't die eaten alive, he said. He put a fresh clip in his gun. I'll do you first if you want, or you can do it yourself. I remembered then that I had shoved the matchbook Zachary had given me in my pocket. Matches. We had matches. Anita, they're almost here. Do you want to do it yourself? I pulled the matchbook out of my pocket. Thank you, God. Save your bullets, Edward. I lifted a can of gasoline in one hand. What are you planning? He asked.